Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Welcome back to the worst year ever. We are recording this on a day where the price of oil has turned negative, which, if I understand economics right, means that humanity has finally discovered free perpetual energy. So congratulations, everyone. We did it.
Congratulations to you for getting that in there, that reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have a whole other episode planned, but Robert was like, we got to figure out how to mention the oil thing. And he really did it.
I just felt like we had to acknowledge that the price of oil has inverted, thus like glitching the Mario map that is capitalism and sending us into.
Certainly.
They really Y2K'd the oil.
It's just such a weird year.
Oh, no. The negative.
It's April.
Yeah.
Well, so we've all learned our lesson. I bought a bunch of oil yesterday, but
that was a mistake.
Who could have known?
You should have known. I tell you every year, wait till May to buy your barrels of oil.
I know. You say it constantly. You call me in the middle of the night and you say that into my ear. And it's just like, you say it so much, it's like white noise now, you know?
Yeah. It's actually the only way you can sleep now, but that's a separate discussion. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the possibly astroturfed, possibly authentic, probably actually a mix of the two, series of right-wing, I'm going to call them pro-coronavirus rallies. The people hosting them would call them anti-social distancing or pro-opening up the economy protests. Katie, you've prepared a summary of kind of what's gone down and what the actual, the president and his party's responses have been. So I'm going to hand things over to you to take us through that first.
Thank you. I will begrudgingly take that baton. It's a nightmare. It's really such a bummer. These protests right now, they're not just being fueled by Trump's encouragement of them, which they are, and which we will get into in a second here, but it's also kind of by his contradictory messaging. Last Tuesday, his team was in the process of drafting new guidelines that would allow some states to reopen businesses, possibly this month, despite, you know, public health officials urging people to stay home, all the stuff we all know. But then he was backtracking and saying that governors will have the power to make those decisions in their states. But these protests have been going on all last week. In Idaho, anti-government activists were encouraging gatherings for Easter. Conservative activists in Oklahoma had a Get Back to Work rally at their state capitol last Wednesday. Last Monday, protesters gathered in Ohio carrying those Don't Tread on Me signs. Let me say that again. The Don't Tread on Me flags, you know, associated with the Tea Party, which is another thing that we're going to get into later. We've also seen protests in North Carolina, here in California, in Huntington Beach, Texas. The list goes on. Also, in Kentucky, after a week of protests, today they reported their highest new case number to date, which is very cool. You can read into that however you want to. On Wednesday, hundreds of protesters gathered in Michigan State Capitol, blocking an entrance to a hospital, many of them waving Trump banners.
And are hospitals something we need right now?
Are they
useful in some way during a pandemic?
They are indeed very important.
What about in general, though?
Also in general as well, but specifically during this crisis, they're pretty important, I'd say. That's just one woman's opinion, though.
Mm-hmm.
What was this? This is from Governor Gretchen Whitmer. The cars were blocking one of our hospitals, so an ambulance literally wasn't able to get into the bay for 10 minutes. You know, it's just what the
I love. Oh, well, no, I hate. This is really interesting because these are the same people who, during like Black Lives Matter, things like that, would be furious at protesters for blocking highways.
Well, I just can't stop thinking about stuff like that. Yeah. Or like how we villainize Antifa. I mean, let's talk about some of the images real quick that we're seeing. They're very disturbing, angry, not necessarily violent, but like, kind of the energy of them feel really, really intense. People are, upset. And this is also getting wrapped up in Second Amendment stuff. You know, we're going to get to that in a second. And, you know,
and
like
communism,
there was one
social
thing floating around Twitter today. Yep, communism. You know, there's this photo circulating Twitter today of this woman in this big truck, you know, leaning out of her window shouting, "Go back to China," at nurses who were calmly counter protesting. It's really intense. And what's interesting to me, and unfortunately I've seen Ben Shapiro make this same point, but here goes nothing. It's like, if you're protesting for the right to be free, you have to also at least try to show that you understand what's at stake. Like in Israel, a lot of people started protesting Netanyahu's lockdown, their restrictions, but they did it with everybody in masks calmly being 6 feet apart. And those images are really stunning because the aerial view, you see they are spread out. Still probably not the safest thing to be doing, but, you know, you're actually showing us that you don't give a fuck about what's literally happening. You cannot deny what's happening. You know what I mean? I don't think they deserve
reality.
Their freedom, but if they want their freedom, quote unquote, then show that you fucking get it. You know what I mean? Anyway, so, okay, I mentioned Trump's contradictory messaging. Let's talk a little bit about that some more. Despite his announcement that governors would be able to decide when to reopen their states, Trump spent all day Friday encouraging people to break the rules and protest. Not just that, he specifically called out states with Democratic governors because a lot of these protesters are also his supporters. This is from the New York Times. In a series of all-cap tweets that started 2 minutes after a Fox News report on the protesters, the president declared, "Liberate Michigan and liberate Minnesota," two states whose Democratic governors have imposed strict social distancing restrictions. He also lashed out at Virginia, where the state's Democratic governor and legislature have pushed for strict gun control measures, saying, "Liberate Virginia and save your great Second Amendment rights. It's under siege." And it's very alarming. I mean, that's not the only instance of him doing this. This has been kind of his MO over the last few days and over the weekend.
And his whole deal,
sure.
Like his whole general thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's definitely been, I have been going through different right-wing groups on Facebook, organizations dedicated to planning events like this. There have definitely been a significant number of people who have interpreted this as a call for violence.
Yeah.
Including a number of folks who are actually like on the fascist right who actually dislike or hate the president. I'm trying to pull up an interesting one that I found. Sorry, there's so much stuff on this page that I have been putting together. But so I was going through some of the explicitly fascist Telegram channels that I monitor on a regular basis because my life is very fun and good and cool.
So cool.
And so in the Corona Chan News COVID-19 Telegram channel, which has a lot of play with like the siege community, and which are like, you know, the folks that want to push for a violent revolution and the collapse of society. I found posts with people basically saying like, "Fuck Donald Trump," but this call is going to be interpreted by other people as a call for violence, and that's good for us. So yeah, on this news thing, they posted a screen grab of Trump's "Liberate Minnesota, Liberate Virginia" tweets, and then posted below it, "Trump declares he can stop shutdowns. Governors say he doesn't have the power to do so. Declares himself king. Liberate your states. This man may be a slur for Jewish people. Up, coked out orange peel, but he did just say you can start shooting and hanging your politicians, your state politicians." 3,929 views on that post. And yeah, and a lot of these are folks who actually don't like Trump because they're explicit neo-Nazis and they see him as like yielding to Israel, but they also see this as an opportunity and permission for violence.
Right, that's all he is to them, right? He's just an opportunity to get these.
Yeah,
sort of...
and this is a good one. And like, as we are talking about this, there's another one of these rallies going on in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And one of the videos I just saw from it is an old military box truck pulling up with about 20 people with machine guns in the back, saying they were from a couple of different groups, just rolling down the streets of an American city. You know, it's one of the most striking photos to me from the Lansing protest was a man on the steps of the Capitol building wearing a skull mask that has clown makeup and a clown nose on his skull mask. And I found a picture of a Pepe wearing an SS cap and a skull mask with a clown nose on it posted to Eco-Fascist Central Telegram channel on the very same day. So, like, you can see all of these different, like, there's a lot of, which isn't to say that everybody affiliated with this is of that. In fact, the people who kind of are explicitly the violent fascist chunk of these protests is a minority of them. But they are a part of this, and they want to try to use it and push
these other...
Yeah,
they're going to capitalize on it. I mean, I can't wait for there to be some sort of terrorist attack during all of this. And it's not just Trump right now. I mean, it's conservatives, Republican lawmakers, all of them are going along with this line of argument. What was this? On Monday... This is Richard Grenell, acting director of the Office of National Intelligence and the U.S. ambassador to Germany, posted a photo of the Bill of Rights on Instagram with the title, signed permission slip to leave your house. You know, White House economic advisor Stephen Moore said that pro-Trump protesters demonstrating against stay-at-home orders are like Rosa Parks.
Mm-hmm.
And he's calling them government injustices.
Yeah, I think it's important to note on a practical level that this is not, these people are very much in the fringe. A Politico Morning Consult poll that was taken last week showed that 81% of Americans told pollsters that the country, quote, should continue to social distance for as long as is needed to curb the spread of the coronavirus, even if it means continued damage to the economy. An NBC poll found a lower number, but it was still 60%, which is a very sizable majority. So the vast majority of Americans, it seems safe to say, are on board with social distancing and these restrictions and see them as necessary and good. But this is
on people's mind. It feels even bigger than it is because the amount of time, especially if like Fox News is talking about it right now in social media and the president's tweets and everything.
Yeah, so like this is what everybody knows, right? That that these things have happened. The president and some Republicans have signaled through them. These protests are continuing, and there's a number planned for the rest of April and into May. In Salem, Oregon, they'll be doing some stuff on May 1st and May 2nd to protest to try to reopen Oregon. And there's, you know, there's also a protest that happened in Maine today that seems to have blown over without a whole lot of attendees. It was supposed to last 2 hours, and it didn't last half that. And so you're seeing a mix with these protests, some of them that only a few dozen or a couple of hundred people showed up to in the entire state, and they kind of fizzled out. And some of them, like in Lansing, like in Olympia, Washington yesterday, 2,500 people showed up. It looks like it's potentially a pretty significant one that's showing up in Pennsylvania today. And so you've got this mix of people online who are saying the media is blowing this out of proportion and there aren't nearly as many people involved in this it's fully astroturfed, which is not true.
Mm-hmm.
There is a significant amount of this that is, you know, you can argue to the degree to which it's astroturf, but a lot of people support it and a lot of people are very angry. And there are states in which thousands of folks have shown up, right? The Lansing, Michigan protest was not an insignificant protest. It was not a tiny number of people. They generated a lot of traffic and they had an impact. And if you're trying to look at the states where very few people showed up and say that this is evidence that the whole thing is fake, I think that you are ignoring a dangerous reality because it's uncomfortable.
Right. It's similar with, I mean, the Tea Party where like, aspects of it are obviously being pushed by moneyed interests and people, but the grievance and the anger, that's real.
Yeah. So I am in the process of trying to unravel what is actually happening here. And I want to start with the caveat that as I try to explain who is behind all these protests, this is maybe the single most complicated news story I've ever run into.
Oh, God.
Not like in terms of like I've read stories other journalists have put together that I'm sure were more complicated. But in terms of like me trying to unravel a thing, this is a fucking mess. So, I'm going to start by talking about the Doerr brothers, Christian and Ben Doerr. So, the Doerr family in general are based in, I think, Michigan. And they are known as, prior to this, have been known for a while as like protest grifters. They have really, like, Zachary Elwood, who's done some good reporting up in Portland, has been kind of like breaking the story on this. But there's actually a website dedicated to the Dorr family's scams in the past. So what they've been most famous for prior to this is pushing against the Republican Party's gun control positions, considering them to be like way too far to the left, and the NRA to be way too far to the left.
Yeah.
And they have created a variety of different websites called, like, including the American Firearms Coalition, Florida Gun Rights, Georgia Gun Owners Coalition, Idaho Second Amendment Alliance, Iowa Gun Owners Association, Iowa Pro-Life Action, Minnesota Gun Rights, Minnesota Right to Life. So they make a whole bunch of different websites, some of which get thousands of people, and try to drum up protests. And the short explanation for why they're doing this seems to be that they are attempting to, number one, solicit donations, and number two, build a mailing list, because there's a lot of financial value in having a mailing list. And actually, the Minnesota Republican Party has posted like an explainer on their website warning conservatives in that state against trusting the Dorr brothers in any of their organizations, because this has been a problem for a while. But over the course of the last week or two, they have opened a number of pages with essentially the exact same name. Minnesotans against excessive quarantine, New Yorkers against excessive quarantine, Ohioans against excessive quarantine, Pennsylvanians against excessive quarantine, Wisconsinites against excessive quarantine, yada, yada, yada. You see what they're doing, right? They have made all of these different groups, some of which have gotten thousands of people. So, for example, the Wisconsinites against excessive quarantine Facebook group, which I think just got shut down. Let me actually double check that right now. It had 66,000 followers as of April 19th. Yeah, so the Dorr brothers do hold very... Nope, yeah, that page is still around, and it now has 101,000 members.
Oh, my fucking God.
So, and these are the same people behind the Pennsylvania group. So you could definitely say that this is AstroTurf to an extent, because these people are grifters trying to make a lot of money about this. So like they are soliciting from donations for people who join these groups, and they are trying to like coordinate and basically build a network of human, like they're basically trying to build a list of people they can contact, because you can monetize that very easily. And this is on the whole a pretty old story within kind of conservative politics. Going back to like the Liberty Lobby and Willis Carto, this idea of like wanting to have big mailing lists of people. That's kind of what they're doing. But these groups are being used to plan actual protests. And this is where it gets really fucking complicated.
Before you get into that, Robert, do you know what time it is?
You know, Sophie, with gas at -$37 a barrel, you can't afford not to call British Petroleum, our sponsor, and order an infinite number of gasoline barrels, because that is the way to lasting financial independence in our economy. Order an infinite supply of fuel right now and become a billionaire in seconds. So
buy negative money and make money.
Yes. That's what I'm urging people to do. And I would also,
I'm just going to buy a big barrel.
Yeah, just get some barrels. They need it.
Let's get a barrel crawling to it.
We're all worried right now for our number one sponsor, the Raytheon Corporation, and they're going to be hit really hard by this oil blight. So please donate money to Raytheon so they can continue building the missile guidance systems
after,
that we need. Yeah.
After you listen to these ads.
These ads for Raytheon.
Thoughts and prayers to Raytheon.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not.
Okay, so we're back, and I'm trying to explain what the fuck is happening with the Dorr brothers and all these protests.
Yeah, what the fuck is happening?
So let me. It's very complicated. it's a fuck. So the Dorrs created a lot of different groups. It's kind of impossible to say how many right now, but they're all along the lines of like such and so and so against excessive quarantine, and. Yeah. People are saying this is AstroTurfed, and there's an extent to which that is true. But the Dorr brothers weren't behind the first of these protests or the starters of these they didn't kick any of this off. So, Jesus, this is such a fucking mess. So the Lansing, the Michigan protests were organized by, which is kind of like the big one that kicked all this off and the one that like first got huge amounts of media attention, which is like the everyone in their cars blocking traffic protest. That was organized by the Michigan Conservative Coalition, which is the same organ. Yeah. And the Michigan Conservative Coalition and the Michigan Freedom Fund. And the Michigan Freedom Fund, it was funded by Greg McNeely, who's a political advisor to the DeVos family. Now, the DeVos family has denied having any role in this. Obviously, the fact that the president backed this and that there's ties from the organizers of the Michigan protests to the DeVos family has led a lot of people to suspect that the DeVos family was kind of behind kicking off the start of this. And there's a good reason to believe that that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. The protests in Olympia, Washington that occurred on Sunday, the day before we recorded this, which drew somewhere around 2,500 people, those were organized by a Bremerton, Washington man, Tyler Miller, a Navy veteran. But they were also organized by a number of different Facebook groups that kind of trace back to a group called American Revolution 2.0. And I can't tell you at this moment who actually started all that. It's very unclear to me the origin. But there is evidence that heavily suggests that Matt Shea, who is a local militia leader and an elected state representative in Washington, is a part of it. He spoke at the event in Olympia. He's certainly an advocate.
Would definitely make sense.
Yeah. And there's evidence that the Bundys, like they pushed for some rallies in Idaho. They are probably involved in this. So it looks like some of the stuff
all-star situation here.
Yeah. And American Revolution 2.0 is planning identical demonstrations in Oregon for May 1st and May 2nd. So what you have within Michigan, you have this group that ties back to the DeVos's. Within Oregon and Washington, you have this group that at least ties back to, definitely ties to some figures in the militia community, but also seems to generally be based in a significant amount on legitimate groups of people who are very angry and organizing. Like it doesn't seem more AstroTurf than any other protest of its size for me, from what I'm looking at in the PNW right now. What we saw in Michigan, you could definitely say seems to be AstroTurfed and seems to have been folks who have like direct ties to the Republican Party. And then you have, in the wake of that Michigan protest and prior to the Washington protest, you have the Doar brothers starting up all of these ex-state against excessive quarantines. So and that part is like, do we call that AstroTurfed or do we call that a scam that is also providing a place for people to organize and will generate more protests, even though it seems to be part of this like scam by these brothers who have been doing this for years to try and drum up more names and more donations for the network of groups that they run. Now, to make all of that even more fucking complicated, I started getting tagged in posts and sent links to a Reddit post that somebody made over the
always a fun time
where it was a piece of open source research where somebody revealed that an individual had purchased dozens and dozens of domains with names like reopenal.com, reopenak.com, reopenar.com. So reopen all these different states, reopen West Virginia, liberate West Virginia, liberate Wisconsin. And this was at the same time as the Doar brothers are creating what now seems to be hundreds of different state groups with titles like such and such against excessive quarantine. So the way that this was taken by people who started sharing this viral Reddit post is that all of these groups were part of a single concerted effort, and that this was very clearly a nationwide concerted AstroTurfing campaign. But then today, Mother Jones published an article where, so if you went into that Reddit post and you looked into who was buying up all these domains, it led back to an individual whose name I will not use on this. That individual began getting harassed by huge numbers of liberals and people on the left because they believed that this person was behind an AstroTurf campaign to get people out in public protesting social distancing and the like. That is not what happened. So Mother Jones caught up with the creator, with the person who bought all of these websites, and he is, by his own description, an old hippie who noticed what the Doar brothers were doing and noticed what had happened in Michigan and bought as many domains, spent $4,000 of his own money buying up all of the domains that he thought might be used by groups like this so that he could squat on them and stop them from being used and hopefully limit the spread of these protests and of this misinformation. His justification was basically, I know that it matters having a website with a really obvious and easy for people to remember and easy for people to guess URL. And if I buy up all of those websites right now, they won't be used by bad actors. So this person went into debt to try to stop the spread of misinformation and was flooded with harassment and threats because somebody found out that he was behind this, And publicize that without noting that, like, actually these websites haven't been created, so no one's done anything with them. But this is also, so you have one group of right-wing, at least one group and probably a couple of groups of right-wing, a mix of grifters and activists who are mass-creating groups that have hundreds of thousands of members nationwide and that have been at least involved in the creation of several real protests, although they didn't start the protest movement. That does seem to have been in part astroturfed. But you also have at the same time these liberals who have bought up a huge number of domains, this liberal, in order to try to stop the spread of disinformation. So all of these things are happening at once.
Is this so complicated?
I mean? It is very difficult to get my head around what the fuck is happening right now. But
yeah.
What is clear to say is that thousands of Americans in a number of different states have turned out, many of them with firearms, to protest against social distancing and to, in some cases, express their willingness to do violence.
I wanted to clarify, in case this was misinterpreted earlier, when I was saying that the way that Fox News has been putting out headlines in conservative media is it makes it seem bigger than it really is. I wasn't diminishing the fact that this is a very real thing that's happening with tons of people, you know, jumping on board. Just like, yes, it's hard to understand the scale of what it is that we're working with. And it's, you know, everybody's scared of it and not doesn't quite understand.
I'm a little bit baffled by all this, to be honest. And like, it's the things that I think are important is, number one, most Americans are not on board protests like these. And it is possible that this, it is possible that the fact that a lot of this is astroturfed will mean that this movement never really materializes in an on-the-ground way. But at the same time, we have seen it in some places. There are some states where these rallies have been minimal and basically pointless and shown that in those states, there's very little support for this sort of thing. And there have been some states where it has been shown that there is quite a lot of support for these groups and a lot of very angry people who are getting increasingly organized. And that is something to be aware of and concerned by.
Yeah. Yeah, and they also have, I mean, for whatever the reason and whatever the motivation, they have the president and his propaganda wing operating as if they're good and popular and people should do it. So I think even if there are fewer people than should be a concern, the ecosystem says that we should be concerned.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, people dismiss so many things like this that end up growing because they're dismissed. The current president was dismissed. As like something that didn't matter, was silly and unpopular. And here we are.
And you
I
also-
mean, honestly, it just keeps happening. Things get dismissed and then they happen.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's the kind of thing people are saying, like I got into an argument with some folks on Twitter who were like,
don't do that.
Somebody made a post being like, there's only hundreds of people at these events. They're not a real protest. This isn't a real thing to be concerned about. And the news should stop covering it. And I pointed out, well, actually, 2,500 people showed up in Washington and a lot of them had guns and ties to the militia community. And that's not something to ignore. That is a real story. That is significant. And the response was like 2,500 people is only like, you know, a fraction of a percent of the state's total population. And it's like, and one of the things that I would point out to the folks acting like that is that I've been to Raqqa, the former capital of the Islamic State. And I have talked to people who were there when ISIS took over. And it started with a few dozen to a few hundred armed people moving in the wake of the government sort of pulling out and collapsing in that area and just saying, we're in charge now. And they didn't encounter immediate resistance when there were only a few dozen of them and they weren't that well organized. And more people kept coming and more people kept coming. And eventually it resulted in the fucking caliphate taking over huge swaths of territory and a horrible, horrible war. And that is, if things go really badly, the fact that these groups in a couple of states can pull together 1,000, 2,000 armed people and get them into the center of a capital city at the right point in time could be very important. And it doesn't matter if millions of people don't agree with them. What matters is whether or not they are able to take and hold important exactly. chunks of infrastructure at the right time. So this is not something I think can be ignored.
And again, the president is their cheerleader right now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, we see that reaction all the time with stuff like this. And even like the Charlottesville rallies, like it's just a it's just like 100 people. Yeah. Well, then what?
Yep. Yeah. Then what? Where does it go from there? So, Cody, you have some stuff about the Tea Party, because this is being compared to the Tea Party and people talking. This is, again, one of the reasons why I think that the folks who are saying this is just astroturfed, ignore it, are maybe making a dangerous call, is that, like, the Tea Party was totally an astroturfed thing, which you're going to talk about, and then the 2010 midterm elections happened.
Should we should we define astroturf for people?
Yeah, I'm going to hand it over to Cody now.
Yeah, so you'll see a lot of Democratic leaders these days, especially, refer to, like, grassroots movements. It's the opposite of grassroots movements.
Yeah.
A grassroots movement is, like, a naturally occurring movement of popular people.
Like the way grass grows. Not the kind of grass that's planted.
Yes, the way regular grass grows. And then an astroturf is basically a fake movement. It's fake grass. It's often, you know, it'll be whether it's paying people to protest or influencing people to be a part of a movement that they wouldn't necessarily be a part of otherwise. I mean, Donald Trump paid people to applaud when he announced that he was running for president. Things like that. So I guess to really get into this, let me take you back a few several years.
Don't.
Back in time, if you
Cody,
will.
Cody, is there some way that we can, there some way that we might, help our audience mentally go back in time? Some sort of noise could.
I can't believe like if we of were all to the step, continuing bits, this is the bit. It's not
we
even
were
a bit.
To step into
this is the
some
only
sort of
bit.
Like mechanism.
A machine in order that allows us to alter what time it is. If
get
that
it over with.
Were to exist, right. How would it sound?
Robert,
is my question.
Katie, take it away.
Just do it.
Auditioning a new bit.
That's disgusting.
So anyway, you know how all those protests, like all protests are funded and created by George Soros, our boss?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, George.
You know, like,
yeah.
Yeah, and how everyone like has like Trump derangement syndrome.
Yeah.
We do call him that. Yeah, that's how he signs the checks that we all get in cash. Mm-hmm. You know how everyone has Trump derangement syndrome these days? You know, like, people protested him in his first month of office.
Yeah, how
it's like,
dare
grow
they?
Grow up, people. Anyway, in February of 2009, Barack Obama's first full month in office, he signed a stimulus package in response to a recession that was surely his fault. That same month in Seattle, Kelly Carinder, known online as Liberty Bell, B-E-L-L-E, on her blog, Redistributing Knowledge, organized the first Tea Party protest against government spending. 120 people were in attendance. A few days later, on the floor of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, trade commentator Rick Santelli ranted about government spending on CNBC, calling for a Chicago Tea Party. The clip went viral, got a lot of popularity. Over the next few weeks, thousands of people protested in cities across America on these general ideas. Fox News got on board, specifically known full of shit man Glenn Beck got really on board. Another prominent figure early on was conservative blogger Michelle Malkin. Listeners may be familiar with her semi-recent activity amidst the alt-right, her support of Holocaust denier and basically a Nazi Nick Fuentes. But the soft and eventually hard racism of the Tea Party movement, or heck, you know, what's going on now, isn't really what we're talking about. Back to the protests, which continued to grow. Facebook groups and Fox News kept pushing more protests. This culminated in September 2012's Taxpayer March on Washington. The cucks. Tax derangement syndrome, one might call it. Anyway, at that march, a Fox News producer can be seen literally pumping up the crowd for footage they were going to use later. The producer was disciplined, and Fox News would, you know, never make a mistake like that again. They were good from then on out. And so we could actually go on about what happened later as the Tea Party, which is not a party, pivoted from protesting at these events that were scoffed at by many people in the media. And they pivoted towards supporting and electing politicians, many of whom we now know and love today. including, but not only, Sarah Palin, Joe Walsh, Mike Pence, Steve King, Rand Paul, Steve Scalise, Marco Rubio, resistance hero Justin Amash, Michelle Bachmann, Mick Mulvaney, Ted Cruz, Ron Paul, and Mike Lee. Those are just a few of them.
Now, Cody, the fact that astroturfed protests started by wealthy GOP-tied individuals were behind the start of the Tea Party protests, that means that none of those individuals you've listed have gone on to have a massive and shattering impact on American society, right?
Astroturfed? Robert. I'm sorry. I don't know what you're talking about.
So we can safely ignore. It seems like this Ted Cruz fellow, for example.
Never heard of him.
A clown.
Shut down the economy.
this organic movement that happened naturally, that was just silly. They supported Ted Cruz. I didn't even know who you were talking about. I'm going to Google Ted Cruz right now.
I'm sorry. This is so beside the point, but I just remembered that story I read about, I believe, when Ted Cruz was a newlywed, drove his wife crazy by going to the market and just continually stocking up on canned soup.
He bought too much soup. Yeah. She made him return all the soup.
I'm sorry, but Ted Cruz was incredibly prescient. Like,
yeah, no, he was right about soup, okay? Nobody's saying Ted Cruz was wrong about canned soup.
I can't believe that memory just came running back into my brain. I also can't believe that it's already time for another ad break.
Wow. Guys.
And
as you go into this ad break, remember this piece of second Great Depression wisdom. A broken clock filled with canned soup is still has calories when there are runs on the grocery stores. So fill all of your clocks with as much soup as you can.
Or be like that one woman who buried all the beans in her backyard.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
And we're back from the break.
We're back from outer space. And I just walked in to find you all here with that happy look upon your face. Because we're all gonna keep casting a pod.
We're gonna cast the pods about the best year of everybody's life.
Mm-hmm. I think our yes anding is really on point today.
I know, we're nailing it. We're nailing it, and I think we may have just saved the oil and gas industry because of how well we're doing this podcast. I don't wanna make a prediction, but I predict everything's gonna be gravy.
Great.
I literally could not agree with both of you anymore. Yes?
I want to hear more about the thing you prepared.
Oh, well, okay. So, I mean, we've gone over the irrelevant people that have no power today that were supported by this movement that was completely organic and natural and came from popular dissent. We could talk about the fringe elements of the protests over those years, fringe being civility speak for racist and fucked up stuff that people at the protests do not want to acknowledge that might be underlying elements of their movement. But this episode isn't actually about the Tea Party. You know, there's so much to say about the effect the movement has had on our politics, how they pulled the country further right while claiming Obama's an evil socialist, and how it was the last big transitional period and path to our current president, how the first national convention of the Common Man's Tea Party had Sarah Palin speaking for $100,000 with tickets costing $547, and about how every single person who participated in the Tea Party movement seems to, like, forget about it all these days. But again, this isn't about the Tea Party. It's a little segment about the origins of the Tea Party, a completely organic grassroots movement for the people, the end. Oh, also, So there's this organization from the 90s called Citizens for a Sound Economy. It's the precursor to modern think tanks and orgs like Americans for Prosperity and Freedom Works. You might recognize those names as producers of propaganda, like with our good friend Dennis Prager, Dean of Prager University, which according to its website is not an accredited university. You also might recognize all of these organizations as being funded by pals of the cast, the Koch brothers of Koch Industries, the second largest privately owned company in the world. Anyway, in 2016, Time Magazine published an excerpt from Jim Nesbitt's book, Poison Tea, How Big Oil and Big Tobacco Invented the Tea Party and Captured the GOP. It describes a meeting he had when he was consulting for Citizens for a Sound Economy, which again, later became Americans for Prosperity. The meeting was also attended by Philip Morris. Quote, the concept that CSE put on the conference table, which was quickly taken up by the Philip Morris staff, was a bit shocking to me. They proposed an unholy alliance, Philip Morris money commingled with Koch money, to create anti-tax front groups in a handful of states that would battle any tax that moved. It would make no difference what kind of tax. The front groups could battle cigarette excise taxes in the Northeast and refined oil fees at the coasts. Any tax for any purpose was bad, and these front groups would tackle them all, with Philip Morris and the Kochs behind them. It made good business sense, and good political sense as well. You could relabel just about anything as a tax, and heaven knows the American public hates taxes. This, at its core, was the beginning of the American Tea Party revolt against the power of the government to pay for its programs. They could recruit average citizens from a variety of ideological groups to their cause. They would work side by side with corporate-directed workers and employees, providing real boots on the ground when enough activists weren't readily available. And no one would be the wiser or even care that these grassroots, quotes, anti-tax groups would be jointly created and funded by the largest private oil company and the largest cigarette company in the world. So, much like these protests, or at least somewhat, it's interesting to me at least that they're all framed as like, we're the little guy, like we're real America, we're being trampled on by the government. But it's mostly like, business owners and landlords pushing it. So not a lot of people know who Rich Fink is. You know who Rich Fink is?
No.
Rich Fink, maybe the most aptly named person on the planet.
Is an incredible name.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
He's Charles Koch's political advisor. As Nesbitt points out, over the years, Rich Fink has talked regularly about their plan to sort of take over one of the two national political parties from the outside and place more libertarian free market principles in its place. And these ideas are outlined in this book being an extensive academic. Now, so I'm going to read these off. And I think listeners of this podcast, Katie and Mai's podcast, Robert's other podcasts will be familiar, I think, with the mechanisms we're talking about here.
Wait, I have other podcasts?
Familiarity is comforting in this time.
It is very comforting. This is making me feel really great. An extensive academic network to support it intellectually. Policy networks in every state to draw on that intellectual underpinning from hundreds of American universities. A true political grassroots alliance that extended to all of those state capitals and worked closely with the academic and policy network. A propaganda arm that could bring tightly controlled messaging and narratives to the fore in the state networks in a way that looked like independent journalism. And a national coordinating group that could enforce discipline in what would otherwise be a chaotic, unruly, wildly disconnected political network that ran the gamut from the Patriot Movement to American exceptionalism. So, apropos of nothing, I'm just going to say some words now.
I love
the
words.
Sam Adams Alliance, American Enterprise Institute, the Franklin Center for Government and Policy Integrity, the State Policy Network, Americans for Prosperity, Prager University, Job Creators Network, Get Government Off Our Back, Enough is Enough, Citizens Against Regressive Taxation, Learn Liberty, Freedom Works, and so on. I could go on and on and on. Anyway, I'm not sure why I brought all of that up. As Michelle Malkin told Fox News in 2009, this is real. These people are here and they're here to stay. So like 2 out of 3 is pretty good. The end.
Encore, encore.
Okay. Ooh. Encore. So to be fair, and balanced actually, in response to this in 2010, the Koch Foundation put forth a statement saying no funding has been provided by Koch companies, the Koch Foundation, or Charles Koch, or David Koch specifically to support the Tea Parties. So, case closed.
Huh.
Yeah, so that's just a brief little rundown of the perception, I think, of the Tea Party early on.
Yeah.
The inception of that general movement, which was in place years before it even happened. And the results of that, an AstroTurfed movement sort of presented as with elements of grassroots movements. Here we have Ted Cruz and Mike Pence.
Yay. Do we want to end this with like some sort of like actionable item for how to do the opposite of what these people are doing?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the only there's a couple of things. Action wise, number one, it is a matter of self defense to not pretend this is nothing, because it's not nothing.
Yeah,
this is significant. One of the things that people should be doing and should be continuing to do is to organize in your communities, because if something like what I talked about happening in Raqqa happens in your area, I don't see this being a nationwide thing, but I think especially if things get a lot worse,
sure,
this is a threat people as something people might need to consider, and being organized on a local level and knowing people and having groups that are used to working together to do stuff even as simple as just providing food to the disadvantaged will be an advantage to you. There are more of us than there are of them. This is a small movement, but if the majority of us are not organized enough to counterman them, then they might get what they want anyway. So it is worth having people continue to organize. There's a recent a podcast that I won't name, but that's name rhymes with slop mo flap spouse, made some statements about a kind of quasi-anarchist activist group in the United States called Food Not Bombs, which provides food and not bombs in a number of American cities.
Oh!
There's not a lot of central
Finally
organization.
Getting it.
Yeah, there's a lot of different Food Not Bombs groups, and they focus on providing people who don't have enough food with what they need, which is food.
And not bombs.
And the comment they made was essentially that, like, these groups weren't super useful because they weren't building power. And there's a valid criticism to be made about groups in the left that, like, focus on direct action like this as opposed to focusing on electoral action. That's certainly a conversation that should be had. But I think people are making a mistake when they act as if providing food and other necessities to people is not a form of power.
Absolutely.
Because especially when things are bad, the folks who are used to gathering and providing these things and organizing have power.
Because they've been doing something out of empathy and goodness instead of power.
They also have networks that are organized and that are used to providing things people need. And when you have things people need and get them to them, and you have a sort of power, that is a kind of power.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they trust you too.
Yeah, so that is the kind of power people should be continuing to build. And if there is not something like that in your local area, try to build it. Look into groups like Food Not Bombs. Volunteer for them if they have something near you. Look into Mutual Aid Disaster Relief. Volunteer if they are near you.
Water, not guns.
And along those...
Good thing, not bad thing.
Just to sort of piggyback, I mean, that was directed... A lot of our listeners are living in states and communities that might be more directly impacted by this, sure, but it's still important for all of us to be paying attention to it, especially with everything else that's going on, as a support system, as just to not be surprised if it becomes something bigger than what it is now. You know, that's not fear-mongering, that's practicality.
Yeah, it's practicality. So I don't think we should be forming counter-protest. You will notice, Antifa, quote unquote, has not been showing up at these right-wing marches, because fundamentally the vast majority of the folks who are in these kind of anti-fascist organizations don't want to make a pandemic worse.
Although they've already got the masks.
Yeah, if another place you might look is if there are local groups of anti-fascists who have been organizing.
Yeah.
You know, the reason the Door Brothers are doing what they're doing and creating all these groups is that there is value, a financial value and a political value and a practical value in being able to communicate to a large number of people who believe broadly similar things that you do.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we should be doing that more.
That's so, a slightly positive note to end on.
Yeah, let's end on that slightly positive note. Also, ammo prices have gone back down, although they surged a bit after everyone got their $1,200 refund. So, you know, just making a note of that, too.
Mm-hmm. Go fill up your car with gas.
Sell your ammo, buy oil.
Yeah, I do think
very simple.
The clear takeaway from today is that oil is the thing to invest in. No downsides.
Buy negative, sell positive. That's the rule, right?
Buy negative. Have the oil companies pay you to take oil from them and then sell the oil to other people.
I love the economy and understanding it.
So good.
I'm going to have oil parties this summer. It's going to be sick.
Oh, man.
We can't hang out inside, but my backyard's going to be one big, like, fire.
It is going to be sick.
My boss at Bellingcat was like, can I pour oil down my my sink drain? I know I can't do that with cooking oil, but I can't cook with fuel oil, so it seems like I should be able to pour it down the sink.
Oh, man.
So the logic works. Yeah.
I'm waiting for the, like, that crowd of, like, oh, Nike did this thing, so I'm going to burn my Nikes, but with oil. And they just try to burn the oil.
Just oil feels lit on fire.
Just,
I can't believe it's only April.
I mean, we are all going to learn that Saddam Hussein was way ahead of his time with lighting oil. I've been saying that for years.
It was market regulation.
Uh-huh. He knew. We should have listened to Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
A thing I say every week.
Yeah.
Well, hindsight is 2020. Oh.
Oh,
shit.
In the episode immediately, Daniel. That's the line.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.